The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right. Welcome to Thursday. I am Nicole Sandler coming to you live at 3 p.m. on the East Coast here at NicoleSandler.com. Of course, on my YouTube channel, on my TuneIn channel, the show goes to podcast, and throughout the rest of the day, we're heard on various other outlets, including Netroots Radio, FYI Network. I'm drawing a blank now. Progressive Voices Network, where we air at 10 p.m. Eastern. However you choose to listen to the show, I thank you for doing so, and I'm glad you're here. I point out where we're live at 3 o'clock because so much has been happening today that you need to know where we are in the timeline of the day, so that it all makes sense. I will explain as the hour wears on. Just know we've got a busy couple of days here today and tomorrow. In addition to doing my show, I'm also guest hosting the Bradcast for Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. So a lot of stuff, a lot of territory to cover. Like I said, a lot of stuff to cover. But before we start, I like to try to start each day with a bit of the funny, and this is quite timely. I figured misery loves company, so why not show that the United States of America isn't the only batshit crazy country on the planet? Our friends over in the UK are having similar problems. They will pick their next prime minister in the next week or so, I believe, and the choices are not good. There is a guy, in case you're not familiar with Jonathan Pye, let me explain to you what you're about to see. Jonathan Pye is a fake newsman over in Great Britain. He's based in London. And what he does are these stand-up reports outside of Buckingham Palace. And so he's on site, on location. He does the intro to the taped package, as they call it in the biz. And while the taped package is playing, he goes on a rant of sorts, mostly to his cameraman. And then as the package is winding down, he comes back to wrap it up for the actual regular television audience. Got it? So with that in mind, we turn to England and they're crazy with Jonathan Pye.
So before tonight.
Whoops. You know, the best laid plans and all that. I'm going to try it again because usually when I get that little echo thing, it works okay. We're going to try it again.
No.
See? All right. I guess I can't play it for you. I had that whole big buildup and now nothing. I'm mortified because it's the only clip I pulled for the funny today. God damn it. I hate when this happens. You know what I'll do is I will play, I know, because there's not much of the video you really need to see. I'll just play the audio for you. Okay, better that than nothing.
So before tonight's crucial debate, let's take a look at the week's ups and downs as the race for number 10 continues.
Okay. See, now he's going to the tape.
Do you remember a few months ago, Tim, when the EU gave us that extension and said, in all sincerity, please do not waste this time? Yeah, well, I'm pleased to say we've spent most of it choosing which incompetent, privately educated, self-serving right-wing piece of shit will run our country this time. Yeah, I'm already used to the fact that Boris Johnson is our new prime minister, because even if he isn't, the only alternative is Jeremy Hunt.
Oh, no. So,
who I think would make an excellent Tory Prime Minister. I mean, think about it. He was head boy at Charterhouse, for fuck's sake. So he was a smug little wanker from an early age. He's perfect, all right? He's the richest person in the cabinet, by far. He's almost overqualified, right? It's on public record that Jeremy Hunt has breached anti-money laundering legislation, breached parliamentary spending rules, and dodged tax. He was found to have misled the public and broken his pledges on NHS funding. And as a result of the backdoor privatisation of the NHS, Professor Stephen Hawking won the right to take Hunt to court. And then Jeremy Hunt had Stephen Hawking killed. That one's just a theory, all right? He wants to bring back fox hunting, restrict women's reproductive rights. I mean, honest to God, how do these arseholes end up deciding the fate of a nation's future? Oh, yeah, head boy at a very expensive school. Gotcha. It's good to have a choice, though, isn't it? His rival, total opposite. Man of the people, eaten, trained Alexander Boris de Pfeffel Johnson, whose first election victory was as Oxford Union president. I think it's de Pfeffel. De Pfeffel? It's a royal name. I'm not making it up. De Pfeffel. Maybe that's why he speaks the way he does. He's just constantly trying to pronounce his own name.
Okay.
Can we seriously trust either of these careerist shits to run the country? To trust a politician, you need to know what they stand for. They don't stand for anything. They stand for whatever will get them elected prime minister. And in this case, the people getting them elected, they aren't the electorate, but the Conservative Party. Fuck me. Not Tory voters, Tory members. I mean, imagine what it takes to get their vote. You don't even have to pretend to want to help the working classes with their bloody food banks and their knits. Forget them. Just chuck a tax cut here, fling an uncosted spending spree over there, dangle the occasional maimed fox in their eyeline. Vote for me, you can kill a fox. A backroom deal here and a backstreet abortion there, but mostly just spout a load of shit about looking the EU square in the eye and promise to swing your balls around Brussels and wipe them on Donald Tusk's face. I'm going to go in there, I'm going to negotiate this, and we're going to do that, and we're going to take back control, and then the UK economy will collapse and the mass exodus of industry will continue.
Oh,
and after a decade of austerity, we will walk ourselves into another recession. But no matter who's in charge, there'll be a millionaire in number 10 who doesn't give a fuck and he'll be fine no matter what.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. Well, compared to many leadership races in recent years, this one is plodding along at a snail's pace. Tonight's leadership debate is the first.
And there you go. That is Jonathan Pye, who's engaged in the fake news tour 2019, letting you know that over in Great Britain, they're having similar problems as are we. All right. It is a busy day. It is Thursday. Howie Klein is back today, and we've got a lot to talk to him about. Before we get to any of that, I say we embark on the news because there's a ton of it to cover. And because you asked,
I read the news today, oh boy.
We'll do it live.
We'll do it live. Fucking thing.
Okay.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
Fuck
Shut
it.
Up, Bill. God. You can, temper, Bill. Okay. There's tons of breaking news. So let me start with this. Donald Trump was expected to speak this afternoon and announce that he'd use executive action to include a citizenship question on the 2020 census, directly contradicting a Supreme Court ruling, a Supreme Court decision. At 2 p.m., just about an hour ago, ABC News reported that instead, Donald Trump would announce that he is backing down from his effort to include a citizenship question on the census and will instead take executive action that instructs the Commerce Department to survey the American public on the question through other means, whatever the hell that means. I wish I knew. It makes no sense. The only thing I can think of is that Donald Trump will never admit that he's lost, that he's backing down, that he lost, and he did. But so there's still I don't know. So Roy Cohn, Attorney General Bill Barr, who is also expected to attend this announcement this afternoon, I guess at around 5 o'clock Eastern, will now have to determine a path forward for three separate ongoing court cases the administration is fighting in Maryland, California, and New York over the administration's efforts to add the question to the census. So the Department of Justice declined to comment to ABC News, who broke that story again just about an hour ago. Just moments before I hit the air on MSNBC, Hallie Jackson had this report.
What we can expect is early morning dawn hours on Sunday for some immigrant families to get knocks on their door from immigration agents. And they would be arrested, and then they're detained here in the United States until the proper paperwork can get processed, and then they're sent back. That sounds like a smooth system. It's not smooth at all. A lot of these families could be torn apart if they have U.S. citizen children, or they're married to a green card holder or a citizen.
I'm actually playing the wrong clip, aren't I? What I'm playing is a clip about what's happening this weekend with ICE. So let me back up and tell you this. Donald Trump has threatened to do it before, and now it's on again. Nationwide raids to arrest thousands of members of undocumented families have been is scheduled to begin this Sunday morning, according to two current and one former Homeland Security official. Moving forward with a rapidly changing operation, the final details of which remain in flux. The operation, backed by Trump, obviously, has been postponed partly because of resistance among officials at his own immigration agency. The raids, which will be conducted by ICE over multiple days, will include what they call collateral deportations. That means authorities might detain immigrants who happen to be on the scene, even though they were not the targets of the raids. You following this? It's quite sickening. When possible, they say family members who are arrested together will be held in family detention centers in Texas and Pennsylvania. But because of space limitations, some might end up staying in hotel rooms until their travel documents can be prepared. New York Times reporting ICE's goal is to deport the families as quickly as possible. So this is NBC News Julia Ainsley with more.
What we can expect is early morning dawn hours on Sunday for some immigrant families to get knocks on their door from immigration agents. And they would be arrested, and then they're detained here in the United States until the proper paperwork can get processed, and then they're sent back. That sounds like a smooth system. It's not smooth at all. A lot of these families could be torn apart if they have U.S. citizen children, or they're married to a green card holder or a citizen. Also, it's not clear that we have the space for them. We talked about this when the operations were called off a couple weeks ago. It's not clear that there's much more space for these immigrants now. So the question is, where do they hold them? The New York Times has reported about hotel rooms as temporary spaces. Mm. I understand Customs and Border Protection could have to provide some space. And let's not forget, those are the same stations we've been talking about with the terrible condition.
It just sickening, right? Senate Democrats are now set to introduce the Stop Cruelty to Migrant Children Act tomorrow. It's a major new proposal that would make family separations illegal, invest much more in legal support for asylum seekers, and beef up humanitarian standards for the treatment of families and children. The proposal is spearheaded by Senators Jeff Merkley and Chucky Schmucky Schumer, go figure. And it's co-sponsored by 36 Democratic senators, including, I believe, all of the senators running for president. All right. So yesterday, embattled Labor Secretary Alex Acosta held a press conference to defend his role in the Jeffrey Epstein sexual abuse scandal. Acosta, who at the time served as a U.S. attorney in South Florida, said that his office intervened in the case after state prosecutors failed to secure a plea deal that would have resulted in jail time for Epstein and give justice to his victims. Quote, "I wanted to help them. That's why we intervened, and that's what the prosecutors of my office did. They insisted that he go to jail and be put to and put the world on notice that he was and is a sexual predator." Alex Acosta is a shameless fool who lied through his teeth trying to protect his ass and threw all his deputies under the bus. Despite his defense of his actions, Acosta wouldn't say whether he'd give Epstein the same deal today. He also refused to apologize to the victims, saying the bullshit, quote here, Today's world treats victims very, very differently. Today's world does not allow some of the victim shaming that could have taken place at trial. This was 2001. I'm sorry, victim shaming wasn't okay then either. Former Florida State Attorney Barry Krischer blasted Acosta following the press conference, calling his recollection, quote, completely wrong. In a statement, he wrote, if Mr. Acosta was truly concerned with the state's case and felt he had to rescue the matter, he could have moved forward with the 53-page indictment that his own office drafted. Instead, Mr. Acosta brokered a secret plea deal that resulted in a non-prosecution agreement in violation of the Crime Victims' Rights Act. Mr. Acosta should not be allowed to rewrite history. Again, that's former Florida State Attorney Barry Krischer, who said Acosta is lying. By the way, in a related case, we are just now hearing some details of a rape lawsuit. We know that yesterday Savannah Guthrie interviewed another one of Jeffrey Epstein's alleged victims, who was 13 or 14 at the time. Now, I just saw this. It was on Twitter. Somebody tweeted it out. It is an actual Southern District of New York court documents from a case 116-CV-04642, filed June 20th, 2016. Again, Southern District of New York. Jane Doe, proceeding under a pseudonym, versus Donald Trump and Jeffrey Epstein. And oh my God, I'm going to read to you some of this complaint. I will also post this Scribd.com document on my blog with today's show, with the podcast of today's show, at NicoleSandler.com. It'll be followed by -7-11-19, today's date, if you want to read this for yourself. The title reads, complaint for rape, sexual misconduct, criminal sexual acts, sexual abuse, forcible touching, assault, battery, intentional and reckless infliction of emotional distress, duress, false imprisonment, and defamation. Plaintiff Jane Doe, proceeding under a pseudonym, brings this action against Donald J. Trump and Jeffrey E. Epstein and alleges that she's an individual residing in California. Trump and Epstein reside in New York. I'm going to scroll down to the part that where we get to the actual information here. I hope you're sitting down, and I hope you didn't just eat. Plaintiff was subject to acts of rape, sexual misconduct, criminal sexual acts, sexual abuse, forcible touching, assault, battery, intentional and reckless infliction of emotional distress, duress, false imprisonment, and threats of death and or serious bodily injury by the defendants that took place at several parties during the summer months of 1994. The parties were held by Defendant Epstein at a New York City residence that was being used by Defendant Epstein at 9 East 71st Street in Manhattan. During this period, plaintiff was a minor of age 13 and was legally incapable under New York law of consenting to sexual intercourse and the other sexual contacts detailed herein. The rapes in the first, second, and third degrees, sexual misconduct, criminal sexual acts in the first, second, and third degrees, sexual abuse in the first, second, and third degrees, and forcible touching and on information and belief, predatory sexual assault, detailed herein are unlawful under New York law, da-da-da-da-da. All right, I'm going to scroll down again, and here we go. Plaintiff was enticed by promises of money and a modeling career to attend a series of parties with other similarly situated minor females held at a New York City residence that was being used by defendant Jeffrey Epstein. At least four of the parties were attended by defendant Trump, exhibits A and B. On information and belief, by this time in 94, defendant Trump had known defendant Epstein for 7 years and knew that plaintiff was then just 13 years old, exhibits A and B. Defendant Trump, again, I'm reading from official court documents from the Southern District of New York, a case filed in June of 2016. 2016! He was running for president then! Defendant Trump initiated sexual conduct with plaintiff at four different parties. On the fourth and final sexual encounter with defendant Trump tied plaintiff to a bed exposed himself to plaintiff, and then proceeded to forcibly rape plaintiff. During the course of this savage sexual attack, plaintiff loudly pleaded with defendant Trump to stop, but with no effect. Defendant Trump responded to plaintiff's pleas by violently striking plaintiff in the face with his open hand and screaming that he would do whatever he wants, exhibits A and B. Immediately following this rape, defendant Trump threatened plaintiff that were she ever to reveal any of the details of the sexual and physical abuse of her by defendant Trump, plaintiff and her family would be physically harmed if not killed, exhibits A and B. Defendant Epstein had sexual contact with plaintiff at two of the parties. The second sexual encounter with defendant Epstein took place after plaintiff had been raped by defendant Trump. Defendant Epstein forced himself upon plaintiff and proceeded to rape her anally and vaginally despite her loud pleas to stop. Defendant Epstein then attempted to strike plaintiff about the head with his closed fists while he angrily screamed at plaintiff that he, defendant Epstein, rather than defendant Trump, should have been the one who took plaintiff's virginity before plaintiff finally managed to break away from defendant Epstein. I cannot believe what I'm reading. I believe it. I just can't conceive of a world in which a president of the United States is even accused of doing this. And yes, Stephanie's asking in the YouTube chat room, why are we just hearing about this now? Good question, because this case was filed in the Southern District of New York while he was a candidate for the presidency of the United States. The documents continue. The threats of violence against plaintiff and her family continued, this time from defendant Epstein, who again reiterated that plaintiff was not to reveal any of the details of the sexual and physical abuse of her, or else, specifically, plaintiff and her family would be seriously physically harmed if not killed. While still under threats of physical harm by coming forward and having no reason to believe that the threats had ever been lifted or would ever be lifted, plaintiff, who has suffered from stress, emotional distress, pain and suffering among other problems ever since the assault, was subjected to daily painful reminders of the horrific acts of one of the perpetrators, defendant Trump, via mass media coverage of him starting on or about June 16, 2015, that over a short period of time became continuous and unavoidable. And it goes on from there. She is saying that as a 13-year-old, Donald Trump forcibly raped her. He was known to her. She had been at a number of parties with him at Jeffrey Epstein's home, where he had assaulted her before, although it was on the fourth and final time that she alleges he raped her. This should be on the front page of every fucking newspaper in the country. The president of the United States has been credibly now accused of rape by two people and of assault by 20 how many? It is sickening. And he gets a free pass. Well, no more. This has got to stop. It is a travesty. It is just sickening. I read this today and I'm just like, what? Again, why are we just hearing about this now? Why? And what are they going to do about it? What's Nancy Pelosi going to do about it? Well, apparently nothing. Oh, I'm sorry. Not nothing. She's going to be busy chastising the only people in the Democratic caucus who are getting Americans excited. Yes, it's disorder in the House. A clash of ideas and ideals and generations in the House Democratic Caucus. It's Nancy Pelosi versus Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, and Ayanna Pressley, also known as the Squad. In a closed-door meeting, caucus meeting yesterday, Pelosi reportedly scolded the freshmen over online trash-talking, saying, "So again, you got a complaint? You come and talk to me about it, but do not tweet about our members and expect to think that that is just okay." Well, thank goodness We have AOC. In an interview with the New Yorker published yesterday, AOC said she has no relationship with Pelosi. The two women haven't spoke since a conversation about committee assignments in the winter. AOC complained that the Democratic leadership has consolidated, quote, an insane amount of power in a handful of people. And then talking to The Washington Post, she said, quote, when these comments first started, I kind of thought she was keeping the progressive flank at more of an arm's distance in order to protect more moderate members, which I understood. But the persistent singling out, it got to a point where it was just outright disrespectful. The explicit singling out of newly elected women of color. And now Nancy Pelosi today has said, we're not going to air our dirty laundry anymore. Well, she should just, maybe start treating her people with respect. God. All right. Now, and something that I guess is happening right now in at the White House, you might think that a bridge needs guarding. Judging by the number of trolls expected there today, Donald Trump has invited some of the internet's trolliest to an event being called a, quote, social media summit. Although the list of attendees hasn't been made public, invitations were extended to, among others, Jim Hoft, the publisher of the heinous right-wing Gateway Pundit blog, Bill Mitchell, who is apparently a radio host who has promoted the extremist QAnon conspiracy theory, Carpe Donctum, an anonymous troll who won a contest put on by InfoWars for an anti-media meme. Oh, this is just a real adult gathering here. Ali Alexander, that's the person who attempted to smear Kamala Harris by saying, posting online that she's not an American black, you know, after the first Democratic debates. And, oh, yeah, James O'Keefe is there. He's a little twerp who goes around deceptively editing videos to try to frame members of Planned Parenthood. He's the one who, dressed up as a pimp to try to frame Acorn and successfully took them down. That's who... Donald Trump has invited to this troll summit at the White House.
I'm now told this morning by an administration official that President Trump is expected to reveal what executive action.
Okay, so the story is backwards. This is the story I tried to play before. Hallie Jackson is commenting on both these stories, both Trump's executive action that he still says he's going to issue an executive order. We're just not quite sure what it is. And it won't be putting a citizenship question on the census. But he's got to fudge it some way to make it appear that he didn't lose. So she'll talk about that. And I think the troll summit as well.
I'm now told this morning by an administration official that President Trump is expected to reveal what executive action he will take to try and get that question on the census. The question, of course, asks about citizenship, but opponents worry that it could mean an undercount of the immigrant population. And the Supreme Court recently ruled against the Trump administration, at least temporarily, on that. Now, the president wants to continue the legal fight. He's been hinting at this for days, but this will certainly face challenges. It is all but guaranteed to head back to the courts. And by the way, the census is in the process of getting printed, so it's still a question, an open question, of just how effective any executive action could be. The president plans to hold that news conference after a social media summit at the White House that's also getting a lot of attention. For the invite list, a number of more right-wing conspiracy theorist type internet personalities have been invited, including people like Bill Mitchell. Researchers that NBC spoke with say this event could just legitimize further people who take to the internet, social media accounts, to harass, to troll, to release disinformation toward politicians and other high-profile figures.
Again, Hallie Jackson from MSNBC. And somebody was asking in the chat room, how do I find this story? Just Google White House social media summit. That's how you'll find this story. Regarding the rape allegations, the document that I just read from. I did find that on Twitter. Twitter appears to be down right now. Go figure. I posted it on Facebook. It's a Scribd, scribd.com document, and it's titled Donald Trump and Jeffrey Epstein Rape Lawsuit and Affidavits. Again, I will post the link on my blog at NicoleSandler.com after the show so you can read it for yourself. I'm just stunned that it's there. All right. Well, there is more news to be had. We'll get to it as the day goes on. And don't forget, as I said, I'll be filling in for Brad Friedman on the broadcast tonight. So as more news breaks throughout the day, I suppose, hopefully I'll have it tonight. We'll see. In the meantime, it is Thursday. We've been missing Howie Klein for the last few weeks. We'll have to find out if he went anywhere. I just know he was taking a few weeks off. So we'll check in with Howie Klein because it's Thursday.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 oranges. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Oh, boy, Howie Klein, have we missed you?
Oh, well, I missed
you. Welcome back. Were you away? Did you go on vacation somewhere, or did you just take some time off?
Both. I went to Thailand.
Oh.
And just really had a relaxing time. Like every other day, I went for a 2-hour massage. It was just wonderful.
Mm. Oh, that sounds great. Oh, okay. I could use one of those about now. A lot happened over the 3 weeks since we've spoken. Obviously, we won't get into all of it now. Just because every day there's a new travesty. Today, of course, all roads lead back to Donald Trump. I just read some affidavits from a lawsuit filed in the Southern District of New York in June of 2016, accusing Donald Trump of forcible rape of a 13-year-old girl at a Jeffrey Epstein party. So I think the floodgates are finally starting to open. I'm just wondering, and you probably have a better take on this than I do, Howie, will the Republicans continue to all excuse him except for Justin Amash?
Yes. Well, Justin Amash is no longer a Republican.
Right, that's right.
The answer is yes, they will. In fact, it's funny that you should bring that up today because Justin Amash was talking about it himself. I should find, I wrote about it, I don't know where. But he basically said that the Republicans have entirely bought in to the idea that in order for their own careers to prosper, they have to be loyal to Trump. And what he pointed out was that Trump does not reciprocate loyalty, and that if there's ever a time when he needs to throw them as a group or one or two of them or any number of them under the bus, he won't hesitate.
Oh, not at all. Well, we've seen that play out many times over the last 2.5 years, time and time again. And my favorite is when somebody, one of his acquaintances or former associates, the evidence comes out of their lawlessness or scamming or whatever, Trump's initial reaction is, I hardly knew him. I hardly knew him.
Actually, the initial reaction is what a good man he is.
Right, that's
then
right.
Then 2 days later, it's like, who is he again?
Right. Yeah.
Was he like an intern on my campaign?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Coffee boy. Wasn't he serving coffee?
I think so. Anyway, so all that's going on. But there's drama, again, in the House Democratic Caucus, where Nancy Pelosi, is she just threatened by AOC? What is the issue here?
Well, I feel she is threatened by AOC. I think that it drives her insane when she sees that AOC has twice as many Twitter followers as her.
Easily.
I mean, it just like sends her into outer space. But, you know, you don't wake up one day and say, oh, she's senile today. She wasn't yesterday. It sometimes takes years and years and years of slow deterioration. I was writing about that today for a story that I'm going to try to get up tomorrow about how a friend of mine, actually someone who I used to work for, who 20 years ago was in his 70s, and he's now in his 90s. And I ran into him the other day. And this is, now remember, this is a guy in his 90s. He was so fit and so sharp that you know, if you didn't know he was in his 90s and you weren't looking at him to mm-hmm. see he was in his 90s, you just talked to him through with a wall between you.
Right.
And someone said, well, yeah, he's just got out of college. He really knows a lot. There would be no reason not to accept that. He's totally together. And yet, 20 years ago, I remember distinctly sitting with him in his office and having a conversation and thinking, wow, this guy is in his 70s. He's really old. He's losing it. He's senile and getting worse. And here it is 20 years later, and he sounds like a 20-year-old.
Wow.
So, you know, it's something that goes back and forth and in and out. And I think when he's retired now, of course. And when you get a lot of stress and pressure, it might make it more apparent. And I think in Pelosi's case, she's losing it a little bit. She's got her staff around her to keep her on the straight and narrow. But I really feel like, you know, she's become so imperious, and she hasn't been. I mean, Pelosi has, you know, she's known for a lot of things. And one of the things that she's really been well known for in Congress is to want to be like a mother to freshmen that as they were coming in, especially women, but everybody, but even more so women. And the way she's treating Alexandria Ocasio and Rashida Tlaib and
Ilhan Omar and Ayanna Pressley. Yep.
And Ilhan Omar is just shocking. And it's shocking to everybody. Members are telling me, staffers are telling me that they haven't seen anything like it. And there's a lot of different factors that are going on here, and people have different speculation. Even people close to her are saying opposite things. So no one knows for sure. And that includes me. And it's just speculation about what is driving this. I'm thinking there's a little senility. There's some weakness there. You know, why isn't she? Someone had a good story in Mother Jones today about how Democrats are just afraid to flex their muscles and use their power. She has a lot of power, and she doesn't use it. And it's because they think the speculation was that she's afraid it'll backfire. They'll lose the election. It's all about her wanting to keep the majority. And you know, okay, well, keeping the majority is a good thing. But if you don't, you know, what are you doing with it?
Right.
You're doing something with it. But she hasn't passed the minimum wage law that she swore on the campaign that she would pass in the first 24 hours.
Oh, my God.
She said she would immediately get that $15 minimum wage passed, that would be right off the bat. Still not done.
Wow.
And it could be done. I mean, she's got the majority, but it's not happening. She's opposed to a lot of the progressive legislation that defines what a progressive is in 2020. Now, she judges herself to be a progressive.
Yeah.
She thinks she's a progressive because, you know, back when she was a youngster, being a progressive meant you were pro-choice and you were pro-gay and you were against gun violence. There was a different way of defining it. Now, all those things are still part of being a progressive, but the whole idea of being a progressive has evolved. She hasn't evolved with it.
Nope.
That's the problem.
Right, exactly. And she, I mean, she's got the gall to say, well, I'm a progressive. No, you're really not. And the thing is, I mean, obviously I hear from a pretty progressive contingent. My audience is pretty progressive. That's the best way to describe them. And what I'm hearing roundly from everyone is Nancy Pelosi not only needs to go, but she is enabling Donald Trump by not opening an impeachment inquiry, by not holding him accountable for all of the not only the norms he's broken, but the laws he's broken and continues to break, that he thumbs his nose at the Supreme Court. And she just kind of lets it go and says, well, we need to win at the ballot box. No, you need to hold him accountable.
But he did win at the ballot box.
Exactly. We did.
I mean, why does she think she's sitting in that up on that dais?
Good question.
I just was writing about this a few minutes ago about how she's enabling him. You know, the House this morning, the House passed just a couple hours ago. The House passed an amendment. It was an amendment written by Ted Lieu and Justin Amash and a couple of other guys to the defense spending authorization bill.
Ah, good.
And it added something in there that Trump is not allowed to go around Congress to sell arms to Saudi Arabia.
Right.
And the way he's doing that now is he and Pompeo are on the verge of declaring that it's a national emergency that they sell, you know, all these arms to Saudi Arabia, and Ted Lieu's amendment prohibits that. And it passed overwhelmingly in a bipartisan way. And, you know, and what I was writing was that Trump wouldn't dare have said that if he was afraid of being impeached. But he's not afraid, because Nancy Pelosi has signaled that she's not going to do
That's
it.
That's right.
No matter how unconstitutional the things he does, no matter how criminal the things he does, she's just going to let it ride. And that she's dug in her heels and she doesn't care who says what. It's just the end. That's it. She's made up her mind.
And Howie Klein, you've got a post going live at downwithtyranny.com at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific, right when we wrap up the show. Nancy Pelosi, the tragic decline. And you talk about it. There was a time being that she was a progressive, but that was a long time ago. And you say, and progressivism has evolved. She hasn't.
Yes. And Biden is very similar, by the way,
right?
Although he was never a progressive. But, you know, he was, you know, I don't know, he must have had some progressive. I mean, he was never pro-choice. He was never pro-gay. He's changed a little bit. He's now pro-gay, and he's trying to claim he's pro-choice on some things. She was a real progressive. She really was. She was a founding member of the Congressional Progressive Caucus.
Right.
She really fought for her version. In those days, that was the version of progressivism. But the idea, I mean, now, hey, what about Medicare for All? What about the Green New Deal? That's really the kinds of things that define progressivism. She's not there on any of that stuff.
No.
She's holding that stuff back. So, you know, she defines herself as a progressive based on 1970 definition,
right,
not based on what a progressive is in 2020.
So what's the status? I know she's got a primary challenger for her congressional seat.
Two.
A few. Any of them any good?
Well, they're probably all good. I mean, I've talked to a couple of them. Right now, personally, I'm backing Shahid Buttar, an attorney who's a really sharp young guy. And, you know, the thing is that she is really, really loved in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
I assume it's going to, you know, it's going to go down a bit, but it could go down a lot, and she's going to win her campaign again. Last time, I don't remember if I'm spelling this out exactly right, but I remember looking, and I think last time she got more votes than any other person running for Congress.
Really? Wow.
And of a challenger.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, and I might be overstating that, but even if I'm overstating it, it's still, that's the direction. She's got huge, huge number of votes. People in San Francisco really love her. It's horrifying to me, having lived there for so many years, that they don't see. You know, although that don't see thing is interesting. I was reading really below the top line in a poll that was done recently, and one of the questions that hasn't been reported, which I found to be extremely interesting, more interesting than anything else in the poll, was that the more Democrats see, the more Democrats who are interested in the primary, the less likely they are to vote for Biden. So in other words, as time goes on and more people start paying attention to the primary, Biden's numbers go down. And the people that are the most interested in the primary and who follow it the most closely are the least likely to be voting for Biden.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does, right? Doesn't it make sense?
It does.
And you would think that people in San Francisco would pay attention, but they don't, because they've already got it in their mind that they trust Pelosi, and, you know, they could just go and vote for her, and the other people who are against her are just crazy radicals, and, you know, they're you know, Pelosi is a good, solid progressive, and they can just vote for her and not pay any attention. You know, I think it's going to fail. In Biden's case, it's not, that's never going to happen. You know, he's losing his support very drastically and very rapidly. The latest poll that I saw
has him now in third place.
Wow.
Behind Bernie and Elizabeth Warren.
Wow. Wow. Well, that's probably where he belongs. And you know, what I said before the debate, and I don't think we've spoken since then, is that I hope he gets a lot of talk time, because the more he's able to speak, the further he can insert his foot deep in down his throat.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly what's happening.
Yep.
His big base of support has been older female African-Americans with no college education.
Oh.
That one demographic has put him on the top. And they were paying very close attention to Kamala Harris. And they heard what she had to say. And that contingent of Democratic voters has started to splinter. And they're not all going to Kamala, but they're spreading all over the place. I was really happy to see a lot of people in that demographic going over to Bernie, going over even more so to Elizabeth Warren. Some went to Cory Booker. So they, you know, now that people are starting to pay attention, they're not just judging Biden by the fact that he was Obama's guy. That's that you know, when he started the day he declared his candidacy, that was the highest he ever was on the poll. He was at either 42 or 44% in polling. And he's now barely in the 20s.
Wow.
And going down.
Wow.
And when you think of that kind of drop, no one has had a drop like that. Nobody.
No.
And it's just because people just thought, okay, he's Obama's guy. We want Obama. We can't get Michelle. Let's take Biden.
Right.
And now they're figuring out who who he is. And remember, no one has really attacked him. I mean, except for Kamala, who really went after him on the debate stage. You know, Elizabeth Warren a little bit, and no one else. No one has really gone after
although,
him.
Although, do you know who was the first of the candidates to run an anti-Joe Biden ad? And it aired. In fact, it's airing in the next hour on MSNBC. It's going to air on Nicole Wallace's show, Deadline White House, that airs at 4 o'clock Eastern, 1 Pacific. Mike Gravel. And I have Mike Gravel's campaign ad here if you want to hear it. He's the first and only. Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's do it. Hopefully this will work. Stand by. I'm going to try to play the video, too, for those watching on YouTube. Here we go. What do you want? Who do you want to lead our party, following in the footsteps of giants?
The most progressive record of anybody running.
This man?
Mr. President, I will vote to authorize the use of military force against Iraq. I do not believe this is a rush to war. I believe it's a march to peace and security.
I do not view abortion as a choice or a right. I do not vote for funding for abortion.
The concept of busing, that we are going to integrate people, is a rejection of the whole movement of black pride.
Both political parties will understand the need for more police officers. Of more prisons.
We have predators on our streets. We have no choice but to take them out of society.
I don't think 500 billionaires are the reason why we're in trouble.
The folks at the top aren't bad guys.
I have the most progressive record of anybody running.
Is this the best our party has to offer?
I'm Mike Gravel, and I approve this message.
And then on the screen, it says, you know, send Mike Gravel to the debates. Please make a donation. In fact, I'm going to be guest hosting the broadcast this evening. And because of this, and apparently Gravel is pretty close to meeting the threshold to get into the July CNN debate. So they're putting an extra push on fundraising. So I'm going to air my interview that I did with him a couple months ago. He's a fascinating man. And he's not running.
Was that your voice on the ad?
No, I read the words that were on the screen. Where you heard me, I was just reading what the text said on the ad. I'm not involved in that at all. But I will.
Can you do me a favor and send me the YouTube of that?
Sure. Absolutely.
Good.
So it's fascinating. And again, I got an email from his campaign today saying that they're so close. They just need a few more, I think 7,000 more donations. It says we're almost there. We're less than 7,000 unique donors from our goal. This is incredible. We have until Tuesday to qualify for the debates. So they're putting an extra push on. But that ad is airing today in the 4 o'clock hour on MSNBC.
I definitely want to see it. You probably heard this already, but Marianne Williamson sent out a letter to her own supporters, since she's already qualified for the debate,
asking them to donate to Mike
Gravel, so that he can get on the stage as well.
That's awesome. You know, usually, look, I'm glad Eric Swalwell dropped out. I want Delaney to drop out. I want Moulton and de Blasio, although he was very good in the debate, to drop out. I want those people out so that the serious candidates can say what they need to say. But I want someone like Mike Gravel on that stage, because he's saying things that none of the rest of them will say, except for possibly Bernie Sanders. So,
I kind of feel that Gravel is really in there to be like a Bernie wingman.
Yeah.
I mean, he's on some level, Tulsi is, some level, de Blasio is, even a little bit Marianne. They're all there, sort of, very much pushing Bernie's ideas, so that it's not just Bernie himself. I don't know that this is, I mean, I'm not saying this is a planned thing or anything, but that comes out that way.
Yeah. Well,
and in the case of Gravel, it may have actually been more than that. It may actually be a planned thing of his own, that he thought he'd get on that stage and or be part of this. And, you know, he's obviously not running for president. What he's doing is trying to get out all these Bernie ideas, which I think is great.
Absolutely. I'll also, I just sent you that. I sent you a Daily Beast article that has that ad embedded in it. And later on, I'll send you a link, if you're interested, to my interview with Mike Gravel, because he's fascinating. And you know what? Everybody should hear him. He's an old man. He knows, that he's not seriously running, but he's doing this, I think, for the right reasons. He even says in the interview, I want to move everybody to the left. That they need to stop with the centrist stuff. He's really good.
Right. Send it to Nancy Pelosi as well.
Yeah, no kidding. Aye, aye, aye. So right now, Howie Klein, as we speak, apparently Trump is meeting with these he's calling it a social media summit, but they're all trolls. It's a troll gathering at the White House. I'm just blown away that this is going on.
I know.
I thought that maybe they put in a moat and they needed trolls to guard the bridge or something. I honestly can't. I'm stunned. And so, you know, earlier in the week when I heard that he was doing this social media summit and there were news reports that nobody from Facebook was invited, nobody from Twitter. No, these are just right-wing trolls who are getting together for a bitching session to talk about how they're being shadow banned on social media.
And he says he's not going to allow it much longer.
Oh, he's not. Oh, that's good to know. By the way, this morning, the news was that he was going to announce an executive action, that he was going to sign an executive order to put the citizenship question on the 2020 census. Now he's backing off. Poor Donald Trump is saying, well, no, we're not. We're going to use other avenues to have commerce find out that information. He won't admit that he lost. He won't admit that he's been defeated on this issue and that he's backing down. He's got to twist it in this way to not admit that he failed.
Right, because it's advantageous to him with his crazy base that it looked like he's being picked on by the establishment, and that he's their hero and he's standing up for them. And he, you know, this whole victim thing is something that's very attractive to these folks.
It's unbelievable. Anything else? When you were in Thailand, did you follow what was going on back here, or did you just tune it out?
No. I definitely was online.
You were online. We were tweeting and writing as usual.
Watching, I did watch the debates as well.
And what did you think? Who do you think?
I thought that Kamala said something that she had to say. I thought she could have said it better. Starting off with saying to Biden, I don't think you're a racist. What the hell is she talking about? He is a racist. He's been a racist since the 70s. Maybe she was too young. I'm older. I remember very well my hatred for Biden started when he was a racist. You know, we had someone like him. I can't remember her name now. Here in the San Fernando Valley of Los Angeles, there was a woman who was elected to Congress who only ran on one thing. Hey, I am a Democrat, but I am a racist. And she got elected. At the same time, there was a woman in Boston, same thing, Democrat, racist, won. They were both in Congress. And at that exact same time in Delaware, we had the same thing, a guy named Joe Biden, who was like, hey, I'm a racist, but I'm a Democrat. Vote for me. And he won the Senate seat. So, you know, he's been a racist for a very, very long time. So for Kamala to come on and start right off the bat, I don't think you're a racist. What the hell is she talking about?
Right.
She doesn't know what she's talking about.
She's talking out of both sides of her mouth. Well, you'll notice one other thing that Kamala did that pissed me off was when they asked who's with Bernie Sanders, basically, on Medicare for All. Who's willing to give up your private health insurance for a government program? And she raised her hand. She's done this before. And then the next day she said, oh, I didn't mean that.
I didn't mean that.
I misunderstood the question. And then she was asked again the next day, and she said, oh, I'm with Bernie Sanders. I support Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All plan. Well, Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All plan does away with private for-profit health insurance. So she wants to have it both ways.
May not have read it too closely.
I guess. Well,
before becoming a co-sponsor.
Right. Exactly. And there's the problem. The only other one who raised her hand and meant it was Elizabeth Warren. And there are people, and I really hate the Warren Sanders followers warring, because I actually like both of them, and they just want to take Warren down. She does not support Medicare for All. Well, in the debate, she came out very forcefully for it. It was the most emphatic I've heard her say that she is for Medicare for All. Period. So I'll take her to word.
That Ralph Nader little news blurb today,
yeah,
about how he thinks that the best way forward would be a ticket that included Bernie and Elizabeth Warren,
uh-huh,
which is what I've been saying from day one. That's what we need, the two of them. You know, there was someone yelling at me today because I put Bernie first.
I see the tweet. Yep. No, Warren Sanders. Why do you put the man on top?
Right. And that's right. That's what she said.
Yep.
Why did you put the man? I wasn't thinking of that way. I was thinking of it a different way, which is that Bernie should be the president for the first 4 years, and then Elizabeth Warren should be the president for the next 4 years.
That's
how I had it in mind.
That works
for me. You know, and to be honest with you, the reason I had that in mind is because he's older.
Uh-huh. Right. And so he'll expire, not die, just, you know, he'll run his course, and Elizabeth Warren can take over for the next 4 years. I think that's a great plan.
Or maybe that's right. She could take over for the next 4 years.
That's
I didn't even think of that, but you're right. So Bernie for one term, Elizabeth Warren for two terms, AOC then for another two terms.
It works for me. I think we've got it all figured out, Howie Klein.
I'm good with that.
Yeah. So one other thing, we've only got like 2 minutes left, but another one of the posts at Down with Tyranny that caught my eye was the one about climate change. The headline reads, "The urgency of the climate crisis might not be partisan, but it is very political." Again, I go back to Nancy Pelosi. Why is she not more supportive of the efforts to tackle climate change? It sounds like she just wants to go along with whatever Trump is doing. I know that's not what it is, but it's sure how it appears to be.
I think what she's doing is trying to support the conservative freshman. Her whole fear is that they're going to lose re-election and then she'll wind up in a minority party again. And that's what she's afraid of. And a lot of these very conservative freshmen are taking money from polluters and climate deniers, and she just doesn't want to rock the ship. You were very generous the way you put it, saying that why doesn't she do more? How about why doesn't she stop blocking it? It might be a better way to do it. I mean, she's very disparaging of the Green New Deal. It's part of her hatred for AOC, and she never loses an opportunity to put down the whole idea of a Green New Deal. Now, if you looked at the post, I asked 10 candidates who are running for Congress how they feel about it, and they were very, very, very strongly for it. Not like, oh yeah, I'll vote for it. It was way more than that. They're talking about, and these are all people who are not just going to vote for it. These are all people who are campaigning on it. This is an issue for them. This is what they're talking to people about when they're asking for their votes. And they're all running against people who are opposed to it. And some of them are primary candidates. So, you know, Nancy Pelosi, for example, wants to protect this guy in Arizona a blue dog there named Tom O'Halloran, who was formerly a Republican legislator. He was, you know, elected as a Republican. He left that party, joined, became an independent, and couldn't get anywhere as an independent. So then he joined the Democrats. He votes with the Republicans all the time. And there's a very good chance he's going to lose his seat to Eva Petsova, who is a really, really great progressive Bernie-crat. She's very much running on the Green New Deal. He is opposed to the Green New Deal. And Pelosi is trying to protect people like him instead of welcoming in people like Eva, who would make a great member of Congress, who will make a great member of Congress.
Unbelievable. Well, there are lots of great information there. I'll link to that post. And again, the new one that goes up just after we get off the air at downwithtyranny.com. Howie Klein, it's great to have you back. Hope you got to see Bernie Sanders last night. He was actually on Rachel Maddow's show, and he was in top form. He was just spot on. So I love seeing
that. I just linked to that on a piece. I watched it as well. I was waiting to see, you know, how long it would take before she said something negative to him. And she saved it till the very end.
Oh, that was nice of her.
She handled it well.
Good. I'll have to send you the link to my interview with Joyanne Reed.
Oh, great.
I took her to task. Some people thought I was a little too rude to her. I just thought I said what needed to be said. I'll send it to you. Howie Klein, as I said, great to have you back. Look forward to more Thursdays with you. We'll talk next week.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye. Don't forget, tonight I am filling in for Brad Friedman on the Bradcast. And yes, I will be airing my conversation with Mike Gravel. It's from a couple of months ago, but as he's coming close to qualifying for the next debate, I thought it was a timely thing, and I think you'll enjoy what he has to say. So it's at the Bradcast. I'll tweet it out and all that stuff, and find it at bradblog.com. All right, thanks everyone. I'll talk to you tonight. I'll see you back here tomorrow, as usual. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great day. Bye bye.